KPRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Paul Craig Roberts. Let me say about Paul what I said about my guest yesterday, Matthew Witt. Paul is another valued contributor to the forthcoming Clarity Press book titled Flashpoint in Ukraine, U.S. Drive for Hegemony, Risk World War III. Hopefully the book will be out around mid-year, maybe sooner if we can get it out. It takes a little while to get all the printing and typesetting and promotion and distribution. There's a lot that goes into producing a book besides the writing of it. Maybe when you've got a lot of wonderful contributors like Paul, maybe the writing can get the writing obviously precedes all the other procedures. But I'm very eager to get the book out as soon as possible, and I'm very hopeful that this will be the definitive text on the Ukraine situation, which isn't going away. And I truly believe that what's gone on so far is just the beginning, and I dread the possibility of what may be coming. Paul, let me just give you a little update on what I just learned just a few minutes ago about Ukraine. I'm working on another article for tomorrow. I'm going to have to get some of this in it. But the putschists in Kiev threatened to attack the nonviolent protesters in eastern Ukrainian cities, places like Kharkov, Donetsk, Lugansk. Oh, they're in a number of cities, Odessa, a couple of cities with long names I can't pronounce very well unless I'm looking at them. And apparently they either called them off temporarily or they suspended them. And what I'm getting from the RT International website is that an elite unit, what do they call it? An elite alpha unit, I think they called it, refused to go up against the nonviolent protesters who were occupying a security building, and they said that their mandate was going after terrorists. I mean, threats to the state of Ukraine, not to attack nonviolent protesters who have every right to speak their mind freely. So they refused to do it, and the illegitimate putschist Prime Minister Yatsenyuk. Yatsenyuk, he made a visit to eastern Ukraine. I'm not certain what city he was in, but he went there, and apparently he made the announcement that this won't happen. So it looks like the game that can't shoot straight. When the mob running Kiev, Paul, can't get their own elements to obey their orders, I guess that's a hopeful sign.
Well, I think what it shows is American or the Washington stooge government in Ukraine got carried away with all of Washington's lies and decided to issue lies and threats of its own, but then found that they were ineffective in Ukraine and that even the security police didn't believe them and wouldn't enforce them. And so now they've backed off dramatically. They've now changed the position. That is, the Washington stooge government in Kiev has changed its position and says that it will now permit these Russian-speaking areas of Ukraine, which apparently were added to the Ukraine by Soviet party leaders, that these areas will be permitted to have their referendums after all.
Yes.
So I think Ukraine realizes that they can't actually use violence against the Russian territories in Ukraine without the Russian army coming in. They know they're no match for the Russian army, and they know that NATO isn't either, and that it is almost impossible for Washington or NATO to get any kind of troops there in that area. And so I think they're also learning. You see, many of these stooges were cultivated for years by the American-financed NGOs, and no doubt they were promised all sorts of benefits from being allied with Europe and Washington. But I think they're already perhaps learning all the downsides of these connections. For example, if they end up in NATO and have missile bases in Ukraine, that they themselves will be targeted with Russian weapons, and that they will be in a permanent state of hostility with Russia, which is very difficult for Ukraine because both countries have relatives in both sides. You know, Russians have relatives in Ukraine. Ukraine, Ukrainians have relatives in Russia. And also, I think the stooges that have been put in office in Ukraine are beginning to realize the dire implications of the IMF clutch. So once they get into the IMF's clutches and accept the conditions, the country essentially is looted. And also the private ownership is looted. And this is annoying, worrying, meeting opposition from the Ukrainian oligarchs, two of whom have been put in charge of the Russian-speaking cities. And they're saying, well, you know, we don't want to have to sell out our holdings to American corporations or European ones, and how does this benefit us? And when the government looks at the loan conditions, the extraordinary austerity that the IMF forces a country to impose on its own people in order to pay off Western banks and the IMF, these stooges have to wonder how they can survive this. That if they come to power promising things are going to be better than under the elected government, and they end up being a dozen times worse, they then will be faced with the same kinds of uproar and protest, and they're already experiencing that the security police are not willing to be used, unlike American cops. They're unwilling to beat up their own people. And so I think these are putting constraints. And, of course, Washington will be in there promising the stooges it's empowered, ever more benefits, ever more money, ever larger offshore banking accounts to try to continue to buy their corporation. But I think it's starting to look dangerous to these stooges. And I think they're beginning to realize that they've their position is untenable, and that if they're faced with secession, more secession, that they can't do anything about, and they're faced with being looted by the Western banks and the IMF, that the downside for them is total. There's death. And it doesn't do you any good to have an offshore bank account if you're going to be overthrown and your bank account revealed and seized. So,
well, I've said exactly what you've said a number of times in articles that I've written. In the aftermath of the 2004 Orange Revolution, when Yulia Tymoshenko was the prime minister, I mean, the worst of neoliberal policies were forced on the Ukrainian people, and there wasn't a revolution, but back then they ousted the first Yanukovych administration, and then they reelected him in 2010. They wanted to get rid of these Orange Revolution types. So now, memories are short, Paul. They're right back in the same stew again, and they're going to find. I honestly believe that Western Ukrainians are going to end up rebelling, just like the Eastern ones, when they realize, when they feel the full effect of the policies that will be instituted, especially the IMF ones, because the economic ones are the ones that hit home hardest. I mean, they're going to way, way increase utility bills and fuel bills, and they're going to cut social benefits. Whatever they are, they're going to cut them hugely. I mean, they're really going to hammer these people terribly. And there's deep poverty in Ukraine right now. So they're going to take impoverished people and make them much more deeply impoverished. You wrote an article, and I quoted you, where pensions were cut in half from $160 a month to $80 a month. Whether it's instituted now or coming ahead, I'm not sure. But I mean, it's a 50% hit on impoverished people. You start hammering the whole population this way, you're going to get fury raging in Western Ukraine, and I really think we'll start seeing some uprisings in the West, the same as in the East. And I think you're right. Maybe these people realize that they have a tiger by the tail, and they've already committed to doing a lot of things that would do an awful lot of harm, but they may end up literally paying the price for it.
That's right. And if this doesn't happen, the other side of this story is the Europeans are going to find out that by enabling Washington's coup in the Ukraine, that they're going to end up paying for it because Russia is unable to transmit gas, natural gas, to Europe through its Ukrainian pipeline. When Ukraine owes Russia so much money and will not pay its pipeline, I mean its natural gas bill to Russia, and any gas transmitted through the pipeline to Europe is subject to being stolen and siphoned off by the desperate Ukrainians. So Putin sent a letter this week to the leaders of Western and Eastern European governments and told them that the situation was endangering their gas supply, their energy supplies, and asked them that they want to continue enabling the disruption that the Americans had brought to the Ukraine. So I think you will see a situation where Western European governments will start wondering, how do they benefit by helping the Americans pull off a coup in Ukraine? So the whole thing could come undone. I think also, Stephen, another problem is the lies coming out of Washington are just getting too absurd. For example, this week, the Washington Post denounced all of the protesters in the Russian-speaking cities in the east as rent-a-mobs. Mm, the Washington Post wrote that these were all people the Russian government was paying to go out and protest. Well, this is obviously false, and the whole world knows that's false. Now, why did the Washington Post write this? Well, as long ago as the mid to late 70s, when I was in the congressional staff, it was taken for granted by most everybody that the Washington Post was a CIA asset, and that whatever was in the paper, it came from the CIA, that that was just what the Post is. It really wasn't a newspaper. Nobody believed it was a newspaper. I never saw any proof of this or anybody, but it was just so generally accepted, nobody thought you needed any proof.
Well, I'll give you some proof right now. You heard about Jeff Bezos, of course, bought the Washington Post and for $300 million. And he admitted, and I think the Post wrote a story about this, that he got a $600 million CIA contract. Now, what exactly it involves, I don't think the Post went into any detail about. But $600 million from the CIA.
Well, they gave him the money to buy it then.
So he really got the Post free with a $300 million bonus. But if that doesn't show a positive link to the CIA, I don't know what does.
You know, the thing about all of this is it's destroying the reputation of the United States government to the extent it had any. This morning I was looking through my just released book, How America Was Lost. It's by your favorite publisher, Clarity Press.
Ah, wonderful.
And I was just looking through How America Was Lost, and it opened to a page, and it recalled, let me show you. Here's how this greatly illustrates how the United States government operates. First, it tells a lie. And then it goes out and bribes all kinds of governments to go along with the lie. And once it's lined up support, it then starts issuing threats to the country it's lied about. So let's take now Pakistan, 2010. You may remember that was the year when the Pakistani president, what was his name? Zardari or something like that.
The recent one who stepped down.
Asif Ali Zardari, I think. So
he
was upset. Let me tell this story. This is very interesting. He was upset because Washington started bombing Pakistan and blowing up villages and things like that. And and then they attacked some border post of the Pakistani army and killed some Pakistani soldiers. And so he, remember, he cut off the supply routes, the Washington supply routes through Pakistan to Afghanistan. Remember that? He just cut them off.
For about 7 months.
Until you apologize and pay retributions and so on. And he also said, he announced publicly, he said that these terrorist bombings inside Pakistan, for which Washington is blaming the Taliban, he said these bombings, in fact, are CIA operations designed to destabilize Pakistan. Well, of course, the Washington went berserk, and they can't allow this type of truth to be told by a semi-puppet state. And you may remember that just prior to that had been what they call the Times Square bombing. Remember, it was the car bomb that really wasn't a bomb. It started smoking
I think there was actually more than one, Paul, but I think I know the one you're talking about.
Yeah. And no, this was it, the Times Square bombing, and it was declared to have been the work of a lone wolf, and it was all closed and over with. Well, the minute this Pakistani president said that, you know, these bombing and terrorist bombing attacks were actually CIA operations, the Attorney General, Eric Holder, he very quickly switched the blame from the Times Square bombing. He switched the blame from the lone wolf to Pakistan or the Pakistani Taliban. And then the Secretary of State, Hillary Clinton, then threatened the Pakistani government with very serious consequences for the Times Square bombing. So, and then, to follow up on this, on September 1st of 2010, there were 8 members of a very high-ranking Pakistani military delegation en route to a meeting with the U.S. Central Command in Tampa, Florida. They had been invited to come. You know, the U.S. Central Command is the part of our military that oversees that part of the world, and so they were invited here to this very important military meeting. And when they landed in Washington's Dulles Airport to, you know, transfer over to the flight to Tampa, they were arrested and detained and treated as terrorists. In other words, this was a further lesson Washington was teaching the Pakistani president for opening his mouth and uttering the truth. Well, this is typical. This is the only way Washington knows how to operate. It has no diplomacy, no diplomatic skills. It's a lie, bribes, threats. Lie, bribes, threats. Well, the whole world's getting tired of it. They're really tired of it. And so I think we may see here coming to an end the American empire simply because it's become unbearable for everybody else.
Sure is, Paul. There's no question about that. And I truly believe that one day that empire will come crumbling down to dust. I'm afraid it may take humanity with it. And I don't know that I'll live long enough to see that day. But you just can't keep doing the stuff that America does around the world, literally making more enemies than friends. That's no way to survive and prosper. And I really do believe that sooner or later, I mean, more nations are really doing more things against America. The idea that Russia and China are getting closer and closer together, including opting out of the dollar maybe and trading in their own currencies. Oh, that would be a nice body blow to America to really hammer the petrodollar. I would say that would be a wonderful initiative.
Well, you see, Stephen, the end of empire may be much closer than you think, and it could actually happen any minute. All it requires is substantial abandonment of the dollar. And one consequence of the American coup in Ukraine and threat of sanctions against Russia is producing abandonment of the dollar, because when the Russian government announced that it will no longer use dollars in its foreign trade, and it will not accept dollars as payments for its energy, that it's going on to a ruble standard. It will also accept gold, and it will accept barter arrangements. And it will accept currencies of its BRIC partners. That's China, India, Brazil, South Africa. So there you see already a tremendous amount of international commerce that's simply removed from the dollar. That I think this will be complete this year. So that means a dramatic drop in the demand for dollars, because that's population of half the world. And if Russia abandons the petrodollar, so will everybody else. And so you will see a massive drop in demand for dollars in the foreign exchange market that the Exchange Stabilization Fund won't be able to offset. And so the dollar will plummet. And consequently, the vast holdings of dollars around the world will be dumped. And consequently, the prices of imports in the United States, which is now an extremely import-dependent country, if you look at the goods on Walmart shelves, for example, they're mainly imports, then you will see an explosion in the cost of living on Americans that are already hard-pressed, as are the Ukrainians, and the whole thing just blows up, and this can all happen this year. In fact, I've been really amazed that other countries who are hurt by the use of the dollar continue to use it. Why do they use it? I think it's just tradition. It's just momentum. It's just nobody's gone to the trouble to put in place a different system.
I think in some countries, Paul, you've got intimidation and you've got bribes. Bribes work wonderfully. You hand a few million bucks to the people in power in some of these third world countries, and they'll go along with any policies. I'm sure that's what's going on in Ukraine, to get the Putschist government to go along with these horrible policies. You know, just bribe them with a few million bucks. Simple. Swiss bank accounts, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, but you see, that can work for little insubstantial countries, but countries like Russia and China.
Oh, not there.
They're more concerned with the power of the country, and what they've learned from the American abuse of the dollar standard is that it's used for imperialism. It's used for financial imperialism against them. So I think this could easily come to an end. Now, let me add this to the mix. You may have seen the other day where a Securities and Exchange Commission prosecuting attorney named James Kidney said he used his retirement party at the end of March to say publicly that his prosecutions of Goldman Sachs and other of the mega banks had been squelched by the top people at the agency, the political appointees, because, quote, they were more focused on getting high-paying jobs after their government service than on bringing cases. Now, when you have a prosecuting attorney, SEC, saying that the political appointees are preventing prosecutions of the criminal banks because they expect payoffs from the banks in big jobs when they leave government service. That is what the U.S. government is. It's like that everywhere. It's not just the SEC. It's everywhere. And so, really, the United States government is totally corrupt. In my opinion, it's not only the most corrupt government on the face of the earth at the current time. It's probably the most corrupt government in human history.
Oh, I agree. I don't know about
this particular case.
Well,
the whole world is learning this.
Well, I don't know about this particular case, but in my book, How Wall Street Fleeces America, I wrote about another example or two of exactly what you just said, where the SEC people simply take a pass on these big Wall Street crooks because they know they're going to recycle back into private industry and business and get lucrative, high-paying jobs. And if they take these people on and prosecute them, they'll ruin their careers after they leave the SEC, and that's the way the dirty system works.
That's right. And it's not just the SEC. It's every agency.
Indeed. All the government agencies.
And so what you have here is a totally corrupt government, and the whole world has learned that Washington never keeps an agreement. Never. Everything that they ever agree to is not upheld. You know, the Russians particularly have learned that. So, you know, ever since they were told there would be no NATO expansion into Eastern Europe, they've had 20 years of learning this. The Chinese are learning that the United States does not reciprocate. And so I think what we're faced with is the world realizing that it's dealing with a country that has no integrity and that no aspect of its government can be trusted. And so this is why last year the Chinese called for de-Americanizing the world. So when you have major countries like Russia and China, and they're now convinced that it's impossible to deal with the United States on any reliable basis on any issue, then they have to say, okay, we're going to create a different payments mechanism. We're going to conduct our affairs differently. This is over and done with. Well, that is what collapses empires. That's what's going to collapse the American empire.
Well, I think you're absolutely right, Paul, and it'll also really destroy the American military machine because it needs this tremendous recycling of dollars to pour into all of the militarism and everything else, and if you destroy the ability to do that, it really is going to crimp America's imperial policy big time. I can't imagine anything more wonderful, and if it happens as soon as you suggest, oh my goodness, we'll have to get together and have a champagne party.
Yeah, I know, and so that listeners won't think that you are anti-American or that you and I are anti-American. In order to save America, which is the Constitution, and to save human life from nuclear Armageddon, the American empire has to collapse because the empire is being pushed to the point that they have destroyed the Constitution in order to advance the empire. And the arrogance and hubris and threats that issue from Washington have brought the world face to face with nuclear confrontation with Russia and China. And so the empire is the enemy of the American people. The American empire is the enemy. It's just like in the Star Wars films, where it turns out that the empire is the enemy. So we've got to make this clear to people so they don't think when they listen to you and I that we're just anti-Americans.
Oh, not at all, Paul. I wish we could go on. I wish we could go on.
But Constitution.
We're out of time. I absolutely agree. I support the American people. I support peace. So don't you. And we're both anti-war. We want humanity saved. That's the big issue. We want peace on earth, equity and justice. We want humanity saved. And you got to get rid of the American empire to achieve that. Paul, many, many thanks. I look forward to getting you back. We'll be on live Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time. Remember our two archive programs. You'll find all of the Progressive Radio News Hour programs in the archive section on PRM's website. Listen to them. Make this program a regular habit.